all faiths are always in the making. They're always evolving and changing and growing. Often those changes are very small and incremental, but I think we're at a time where we have to do some pretty radical rethinking. In the Christian faith, I talk about three areas. One has to do with how we define our faith, one has to do with how we understand God, and one has to do with how we understand the church or organized religion.
So that's almost the whole kit and caboodle right there that, that you need to redefine.
That's why I say I don't think it's a small incremental change. That's right.
So basically, what is it that you're saying that we have to shift to?
Sure. Well, regarding how we define our faith, for something like 1400 or 1500 years, if you ask a lot of Christians what it means to be a Christian, they would say it's about a system of beliefs. A lot of us think that we're at a point of shifting away from defining our faith by beliefs. It would be like defining science by a list of facts as opposed to a deeper method. And what we're suggesting is that, not just in Christian faith, other faith traditions too are coming to see that what their real treasure is their method or their pursuit, or the term I use for it is their way of life.
Moving away perhaps from doctrine to a deeper understanding of the gospel message?
We're not saying that that we don't teach, since doctrine means teaching, but that the essence of what we teach is actually a way of life and not just a set of statements that you have to either check, agree, or disagree.
And your understanding of God, how does that change?
I think one of the consequences of September 11, 2001 is that we're realizing the potential for violence in every religion. And what's happened among Christians, of course, some Christians have only focused on the current kind of epidemic of violence associated with Islam. But if Christians look back in our own history, we realize we've been covering up and suppressing huge amounts of violence in our own history. And what a lot of us are coming to see is that if our understanding of God is violent, then we're going to, in many ways, echo and mirror or image that violence in our own behavior. So there's been fantastic work being done over many decades by theologians around the world looking at the issue of violence and God and proposing that our understanding of God needs to be nonviolent.
You also talk about the need for a greater personal relationship with God, that God is not this being out there, but a God that we access perhaps in our interior life.
There's an essential recentering on spirituality. What is happening in our own experience of God, and in what ways are we being transformed to more loving people, more humble people, more people more characterized by awe and wonder as opposed to being know-it-alls and kind of bring along a critic, you know? And so that kind of inner transformation and emphasis on spiritual experience, our inner state, if you will, that I think is a really big part of the shift that and this migration that I believe is in its early stages.
Something that comes through to me in your books is that you're talking about the way we live our faith day to day, that it's not just about how we worship on Sunday.
Yes, and it's so interesting. And I think, you know, all the complexities of this current campaign are bringing a lot of this to the fore. By this or that church's standards, you could have the right beliefs or participate in all the right institutional rituals and markers and still be a racist or still, you know, treat women as inferior to men or still, you know, show shaming prejudice toward LGBTQ people or be horribly careless about the environment. And so what we're realizing is that in many ways, you're ticking off the right boxes on a set of beliefs doesn't tell us that much about what kind of person you are. And we're wanting to pay a lot more attention to that content of character.
Let's talk a little bit about the current election. Are you disheartened by the amount of divisiveness that is exhibiting itself?
Yeah, disheartened is probably an understatement. But this has been going on for a long time. And in some ways, it feels like we're reaching almost a tipping point or a point of extremism in this election. One of the unhealthy effects of the cocktail of religion and politics is that you know, just as politics looks for a wedge issue that it can, where it can carve off more and more percentage points of votes, very often religion fills in by providing a shortcut to morality. So the idea is, if you have the right opinion on abortion or the right opinion on homosexuality, instantly you're among the chosen few who are morally superior, morally correct, and so on. And that allows you to then not pay attention to a whole lot of other issues. And I think one of the things that's happening in this election is we're saying, well, hold on, what about violence that's being done to young black men, especially in our cities, by police officers? What about the systemic effects of racism that are deeply embedded in our culture and in our history? My goodness, what about the climate? What about the environment? What about the fact that we now know we have a way of fueling our civilization that's destroying our future? And this, the idea that you, people could take a shortcut to morality by only focusing on one or two issues, to me, becomes more and more destructive. And it's another reason why I think both our politics and our religion need some major overhauls right about now.
You come out of the evangelical Christian tradition. Some people may have difficulty understanding why so many evangelicals, it looks like from the polls at any rate, are embracing a candidate who has been twice divorced, thrice married, who has really at times seemed to demonize the other in terms of the immigrant, the person who doesn't look like a white person, the person who doesn't worship like a Christian. How does that jive then with Christian beliefs, with what Jesus taught?
I would be among those who feel it, the simple answer is it doesn't, it doesn't sync up at all. And this actually reveals something about American religion, that there has been a kind of strain of white Protestantism, and really a lot of Roman Catholics have been recruited as allies in this, that has always been very racially charged and has always been anti-immigrant. Whoever, you know, the next wave of immigrants are, you can be sure that they'll be demonized. Along with that comes a whole understanding of domination, that there's some powerful guy in charge, and the only way we have peace is by having a strong man at the top who keeps everybody in line. Well, isn't it ironic that in this election, we really are choosing between a rich guy who comes across as a bully, if not strong, and a woman? You couldn't have a starker choice about what some of our assumptions are about how the world works and what brings us peace and order.
To go back to your book that you just mentioned, your latest book is called The Great Spiritual Migration. What is that spiritual migration that you're referring to?
Well, very often we think that change comes in religion through some people shut away in a room making decisions. And certainly there's a dimension of that. But there are spontaneous movements that arise. And sometimes they take people by surprise. And I think we're in the early stages of a of that kind of a spontaneous movement. I think it's happening in many faiths, but as a Christian, I'm writing about the way it's happening in the Christian faith. And it's this migration toward a much more what I would call a holistic understanding, faith and is not just about what happens after you die, and it's not just about what happens in a church building, but it really is about all of life, everything from the health of the ocean to the health of our families to the way we eat and conduct our relations with the earth to the way we treat each other, including the most vulnerable and the most outcast among us. So it's a deep shift in our understanding of what it means to be people of faith.
You were one of the first pastors way back in the 90s to begin talking about how do we get young people engaged in church again, because they were leaving in droves. They had been leaving in droves, and they weren't coming back as young parents or young marrieds. And now it's 20 years later, and we still don't see a lot of young faces in the pews on Sundays.
Yes.
What do you say to that now?
Well, you know, in many ways, that's been one of my central projects, really, through my whole adult life. I think my generation began, some of my generation began that departure, and it's only intensified and accelerated in succeeding generations. And I feel a little differently about it now than I did 20 years ago, in at least this way. 20 years ago, I felt this is a problem that a few tweaks could perhaps solve. And now I think, no, actually the departure of younger generations is actually data that the church needs. In some ways, they never would have listened to young people unless the young people left. And when they leave, people start waking up and saying, oh, maybe the kind of change we need is not just cosmetic and stylistic. It's not just a matter of guitars and drums rather than organs and pianos. There are some deeper things going on. And I have come to believe that unless we deal with those deeper issues, then people have very good reasons to stay away.
You will be giving a workshop on Saturday at First Presbyterian Church, and the topic is Healing a Fractured World.
Well, I'll be looking at first trying to help the folks there understand what are some of the deeper diagnoses of what's going on. You know, we keep treating symptoms, and sooner or later, we've really got to start paying attention to the underlying issues. So we'll be talking about what some of those deeper issues and fractures are. And then I'll be talking about the resources that I think have been there all along for us in Christian faith, in the scriptures and what we call the gospel or the essential message of Jesus, about what resources we have kind of hidden in our backyard, so to speak. Very often we're unaware of them. That will help us to bring healing in exactly the areas of greatest need.
We've been talking with Brian McLaren. He is a theologian and a leader in the National Emerging Church Movement. He is the 5th annual Jim and Gwen Prine lecturer this weekend. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks for your great questions. Pleasure to be with you.
I'm Judy Valente.